Here's your fair value brief for Wednesday, July 29, 2026. The Fed's 2 p.m. decision today could shake up bond markets that have grown a little too comfortable. Right now, investment-grade credit spreads are sitting at just 0.81%, and high-yield spreads are at 2.81%. Tight levels when you consider 10-year Treasury yields are at 4.65%. If the Fed leans hawkish, we could see investment-grade spreads jump by 10 basis points, and that might be the first sign of a broader repricing. Meanwhile, tensions in the Middle East are pushing oil higher. Brent crude jumped 3.9% overnight to $87.37 after Iranian missile strikes. But the bigger issue is the Strait of Hormuz blockade. Tanker traffic is down 38%, and costs are up by $200,000 to $500,000 per voyage. That's a serious bottleneck when you're talking about 20% of the world's oil supply. And in tech, we're seeing a real split. Chip stocks like AMD, Micron, and Intel are struggling, each down more than 8% just yesterday, as higher rates weigh on their capital-heavy models. But software stocks? They're climbing. Adobe was up 4.8%, Salesforce up 4.5%, and ServiceNow up 4.8%. Cash-rich, asset-light businesses are holding up a lot better in this environment. Now, to the markets. The Fed's decision at 2 p.m. and Powell's press conference at 2:30 will set the tone for everything. If they come across as hawkish, credit spreads could widen, and that would pressure rate-sensitive sectors like housing, autos, and semiconductors. But if they stay neutral or lean dovish, we might see a relief rally in bonds and some of those oversold growth stocks. Keep an eye on the 2-year Treasury yield. It's at 4.78% right now. If it moves above 4.8%, that's a sign credit markets are bracing for tight policy to stick around. Here's what to watch this week. The big story today is the Fed's $2.5 trillion corporate credit balancing act. It's not about whether they hike or hold. It's about whether they'll finally trigger an adjustment in a market where spreads just don't match up with Treasury yields. Right now, investment-grade corporate bonds yield just 0.81% over Treasuries, and high-yield spreads are at 2.81%. Both are near record lows. But with the 10-year Treasury at 4.65%, those spreads should really be 30 to 50% wider. So why the disconnect? Two reasons. Companies locked in cheap pandemic-era rates, so they're not defaulting yet, and the AI boom has flooded corporate bonds with yield-chasing capital. But we're starting to see some strain. Semiconductor stocks, once the darlings of the AI rally, are now leading the sell-off. AMD, Micron, and Intel are down 15 to 30% this month as those higher Treasury yields expose their capital-heavy models. Meanwhile, software stocks like Adobe, Salesforce, and ServiceNow are up 10 to 20% this month because they're cash generative and asset light. So here's the risk. If Powell signals that rates will stay high for longer, Treasury yields will climb, and corporate bond spreads will have to widen just to stay competitive. That would squeeze earnings for capital intensive firms and could trigger margin calls in leveraged credit portfolios. Even a 10 basis point jump in investment grade spreads from 0.81% to 0.91%. could wipe out billions in bond values. And if high-yield spreads widen by 20 or 30 basis points, junk bond ETFs and speculative borrowers will feel it the most. The fallout could look like this. Wider spreads mean higher borrowing costs, which compress earnings and lead to equity sell-offs. Junk bonds underperform, retail investors panic, and we see forced ETF liquidations. And if the VIX, currently at 18.21, starts climbing, volatility could feed on itself. Key moments to watch today. The rate decision at 2 p.m., Powell's press conference at 2:30, and the 2-year Treasury yield. If that yield rises above 4.8%, it's a sign credit markets are preparing for a prolonged tight policy environment. And if high-yield ETFs like HYG or JNK gap down at the open, that's a sign of spreading contagion. The core risk here isn't a recession, it's a repricing. Even with steady growth, if the Fed stays firm, capital costs could reset sharply, and that would catch over-leveraged firms and complacent bondholders off guard when refinancing time comes. Now, let's step back and look at the big picture. Bonds and stocks are sending very different signals right now. Bonds are pricing in caution, while stocks are still clinging to that soft landing story. One of them is going to be wrong. The bond market is flashing warnings. The 2-year Treasury yield, which is most sensitive to Fed policy, rose 8 basis points yesterday to 4.78%. The 10-year edged up just 1 basis point to 4.41%. That flattened the yield curve to negative 37 basis points, its most inverted level since 2023. That inversion suggests bonds are anticipating either slower growth or rate cuts soon, neither of which really aligns with the optimism we're seeing in stocks. Credit markets are starting to show some unease, too. Investment-grade spreads ticked up 1 basis point to 0.81%, and high-yield spreads widened 5 basis points to 3.52%. It's not a distress signal yet, but it's a shift. Meanwhile, the S&P 500 is only down 0.2% this month, and even with the Nasdaq's 6.8% monthly decline, it's still up 12% year-to-date. The divergence is stark. Semiconductors like AMD and Micron are collapsing, down 15.7% and 28.4% this month, respectively, while software and consumer staples are holding firm. And with the VIX at 18.21, stocks aren't showing much distress at all. Oil is the wild card here. Brent crude surged 3.9% overnight to $87.37 after Iran's missile strikes. The Strait of Hormuz blockade has cut tanker traffic by 38%, adding $200,000 to $500,000 per voyage in costs. If oil stays above $90, the 10-year Treasury yield could grind higher, keeping credit markets under pressure and forcing the Fed to confront inflation all over again. So here's how today's Fed decision could play out. If they lean hawkish, even with a hold, Treasury yields will likely rise, steepening the curve but pressuring credit spreads. High-yield bonds would underperform as risk premiums expand, and rate-sensitive stocks like semiconductors, housing, and autos would probably extend their declines. If the Fed adopts a dovish or neutral tone, bonds could rally, with the 10-year yield potentially dipping below 4.5%. Credit spreads would tighten as the no-landing narrative regains traction, and tech, especially software and AI segments that don't depend as much on cheap debt, could rebound. The bottom line? Today's decision will determine whether bonds or stocks have the right read on the economy. With oil adding inflationary pressure, the Fed's guidance on rate cuts, or the lack of them, becomes the linchpin. Now let's talk crypto. Bitcoin held steady with a 1.2% gain over the past 24 hours, trading at $64,713. But Ethereum is the one leading the sector right now. Ethereum ETFs have attracted $96 million over just 3 sessions, while Bitcoin ETFs saw $11.6 million in outflows. This shift suggests institutions are moving beyond the Bitcoin-first approach, as Ethereum's role in decentralized finance, stablecoins, and tokenized real-world assets gains traction. Ethereum itself traded flat today, but is still up 3.2% on the week, outperforming Bitcoin for the first time in months. The key technical level to watch is its 7-day high of $1,981. If it breaks out above that, the next target is $2,100. The bigger story here is the structural shift. Tokenized real-world assets, things like treasuries, private credit, and commodities, now represent a record $37 billion in total value. Wall Street is embracing blockchain-based assets faster than ever. Citi just initiated coverage of the tokenization platform Securitize with a buy rating, calling it a structural growth opportunity. If institutional adoption keeps accelerating, Ethereum's smart contract infrastructure could outperform Bitcoin in the second half of this year. Key indicators to watch: Ethereum ETF flows. If the inflows keep coming, it confirms that institutional money is rotating into utility crypto. And keep an eye on tokenized treasury yields. Platforms like Ondo Finance are offering yields above 5%, which makes them real competition for traditional money market funds. Now, let's check in on currencies. The US dollar index gained 0.2% this month to 101.33, but the real action is happening beneath the surface. The dollar is strengthening against commodity-linked currencies. The Australian dollar fell 0.6% yesterday, and the Canadian dollar slipped 0.2%. as rising oil prices and fading risk appetite drive haven flows. The Japanese yen remains near multi-decade lows, with US dollar to Japanese yen at 163.62, while the euro is struggling for momentum at 1.1396 against the dollar. The dollar's ascent reflects two big forces: geopolitical uncertainty, especially with the Middle East tensions, and the Fed's policy stance, which, even if unchanged today, is still outpacing dovish shifts from other central banks. Macro implications? A stronger dollar tightens financial conditions globally, which puts pressure on emerging markets and U.S. exporters. And if oil stays above $85, the dollar's haven bid could persist, weighing even more on commodity currencies. Here's the Fed's dilemma. If they sound hawkish today, the dollar could push even higher, effectively tightening conditions without them having to hike. But if they tilt dovish, the dollar might weaken, only if oil prices cooperate. Now, let's turn to global developments. The Strait of Hormuz blockade is still in place as Iran tensions rise. Overnight missile strikes on U.S. forces mark the latest escalation in a six-month conflict that's having real economic consequences. Commercial traffic through the strait remains closed, with only Iranian and Chinese-affiliated vessels attempting the northern passage. Tanker transits have plunged 38% since the blockade began, reducing Persian Gulf oil flows to just 41% of pre-war levels. And it's not just crude. This is disrupting global shipping of liquefied natural gas, chemicals, and containerized goods. The detours are adding $200,000 to $500,000 per voyage in fuel and insurance costs, and the delays are compounding supply chain pressures. Brent crude responded with that 3.9% overnight jump to $87.37, but it's still below the $100-plus spikes we saw earlier this year. Markets seem to be pricing in a prolonged stalemate rather than all-out war. Iran is still exporting about 1 million barrels of oil per day to China through back channels, which gives Tehran revenue while muting the supply shock. But there are three critical thresholds to watch here. 1. $90 a barrel for Brent. Above that, the Fed's inflation fight gets a lot harder. 2. $200,000, the additional cost per tanker voyage from rerouting. If this persists, cumulative costs will push freight rates even higher. 3. 38%, the reduction in tanker traffic since the blockade. If this continues, shipping bottlenecks will only get worse. And don't overlook China's role. Beijing's continued purchases of Iranian oil, about 1 million barrels a day, keep some supply flowing, but they also fund Tehran's military operations. If the U.S. cracks down on these transactions, oil prices could surge again. Now, speaking of China, its role as the marginal driver of global oil demand is fading. A recent report highlights that the nation's oil consumption has become far more flexible than we used to think, thanks to three big shifts: slower economic growth as the post-pandemic rebound fades, rapid gains in energy efficiency from EV adoption and industrial upgrades, and strategic stockpiling. China built up reserves when prices were low, and now it's drawing them down. The result? Oil prices now react more to geopolitics than to Chinese demand. When the Strait of Hormuz closed in February, traders expected China to aggressively buy discounted Iranian barrels. Instead, Beijing has been selective, buying only on price dips and relying on its stockpile. This marks a permanent shift. China is no longer the buyer of last resort for global crude. Investment implications? Gasoline price spikes during Middle East crises might be more muted if China stays on the sidelines. And if demand growth stays weak, oil majors like Exxon and Chevron could underperform. Now, let's look at some corporate highlights. AMD's shares fell 8.2% yesterday to $454.62. extending its monthly loss to 15.7%. This came despite the company announcing a 15-year, $14 billion infrastructure partnership with Core Scientific. The deal covers 529 megawatts of data center capacity, but it wasn't enough to offset concerns about slowing AI capital expenditures in a rising rate environment. Micron's route is accelerating. The stock dropped 8.8% yesterday to $820.53. bringing its monthly decline to 28.4%. The company is facing a triple threat. Memory prices are down about 15% this quarter, borrowing costs are rising on its $10 billion debt load, and there are growing questions about whether AI demand can stay this strong. Coca-Cola, on the other hand, is showing serious pricing power. Shares rose 5% yesterday to $88.27 after the beverage giant reported 11% organic revenue growth, driven by successful price increases. The stock is now up 6.8% this month, outperforming the S&P 500 by 7 percentage points. Boeing is back in the black. The aerospace manufacturer climbed 4.8% yesterday to $221.56 after posting its first quarterly profit since 2021. The gain was led by a 15% year-over-year increase in defense and services revenue. And with a backlog of more than 4,500 unfilled orders, worth roughly $500 billion, Boeing has a long-term cushion. And Adobe's AI tools are driving a 20% monthly gain. The software company rose 4.8% yesterday to $249.18 after exceeding earnings estimates. Its AI-powered tools, like Firefly and Sensei, are generating $1.2 billion in annualized revenue. Adobe is now one of the S&P 500's top monthly performers, up 20.7%. Now let's talk policy. Today's Fed decision is about more than just rates. It's a test of the central bank's credibility. Can they maintain market confidence while balancing persistent inflation risks and emerging growth concerns? The challenge comes from the Fed's repeated forecast missteps. Back in June, policymakers projected 3 rate cuts for 2026. But now, with Brent crude above $85 and core inflation stuck at 3.5%, those cuts look unlikely. If the Fed acknowledges this shift today, it risks reinforcing the perception that they're always behind the curve. Here's the hawkish case. Oil prices are rising, wage growth is persistent at 4.1% year-over-year, and AI-driven tech capex is up 30% this year, sustaining demand. The dovish case? Consumer spending is slowing. June retail sales grew just 0.1%. Housing is cooling as mortgage rates hit 6.58%. And credit spreads are tightening, which suggests markets are pricing in a soft landing. The most likely outcome today is a hold with hawkish language, no rate change, but a warning that cuts are delayed. If that happens, the dollar would likely lift, pressuring exporters and emerging markets. Credit spreads would widen, especially in high-yield and rate-sensitive sectors like semiconductors, housing, and autos would probably take a hit. Now, let's dig into market mechanics. There's a disconnect between treasury yields and corporate credit spreads, and it's setting the stage for a potential squeeze. With the 10-year treasury at 4.65%, investment-grade spreads at 0.81%, and high yield at 2.81% are 30 to 50% tighter than historical norms for this yield environment. Here's what could trigger the adjustment. If the Fed signals higher for longer today, treasury yields will rise further, forcing corporate bond spreads to widen just to attract buyers. Earnings revisions would turn negative for leveraged firms, raising default risks. The domino effect would look like this. Investment-grade spreads widen by 10 to 20 basis points. Corporate bond ETFs like LQD and HYG sell off. High-yield spreads widen by 20 to 30 basis points, and junk bond funds see outflows. The VIX would spike as volatility feeds on itself. Critical levels to watch. Investment-grade spreads above 0.9% would be an early warning. High-yield spreads above 3% would put real pressure on junk bonds. And if LQD, the iShares IG corporate bond ETF, falls below $125, that's a sign institutional selling is accelerating. Now, let's talk about something that doesn't get enough attention, private credit. While banks and public bonds dominate the headlines, private credit, a $1.6 trillion market where non-bank lenders like Blackstone, Apollo, and KKR extend loans to companies, has become a critical, if opaque, pillar of corporate finance. Here's how it works. A mid-sized software firm looking for $50 million for expansion might get a bank offering 7% with strict covenants, or a private credit fund charging 10 to 12% for more flexibility, fewer covenants, longer terms, faster approval. Borrowers pay a premium for speed and leniency. Lenders accept higher risk for higher returns. Private credit really expanded after 2008, when regulatory crackdowns like Dodd-Frank and Basel III forced banks to retreat from riskier lending. Private credit filled the void, especially for mid-market companies too large for venture capital but too small for public bonds. Leveraged buyouts, where private equity firms use private credit to fund acquisitions, and distressed borrowers that banks avoid but private lenders will take on for a price. The problem? Transparency, or the lack of it. Unlike banks, private credit funds disclose very little. No quarterly earnings calls, no detailed loan books. Risks stay hidden until defaults start happening. For example, in 2022, private credit heavily financed commercial real estate, just as office vacancies surged. When those loans defaulted in 2023, the problem was already advanced because the data was obscured. Here's the connection to today's markets. When treasury yields rise, all fixed income assets reprice, including private credit. But because these loans are illiquid, the pain shows up later, often as defaults. Firms that borrowed at 8% in 2021 are now facing refinancing at 12% or more, and that's a cash flow crisis waiting to happen. So is private credit stabilizing the economy by filling a gap left by banks? Or is it destabilizing by creating hidden risks? The answer is both. It funds growth but amplifies downturns because of its lack of transparency. Now, let's wrap up with the key events this week. Today, at 2 p.m., we've got the U.S. federal funds rate decision and Powell's press conference at 2:30. The Fed is expected to hold rates steady, but the policy tone will determine whether credit spreads widen or equities rally. Tomorrow, we get U.S. advanced GDP, forecast at 2.1% quarter over quarter, and core PCE, forecast at 0.2% month over month. GDP will show us the economy's momentum, and PCE is the Fed's favorite inflation gauge. Also tomorrow, the Bank of England's rate decision is expected to hold at 3.75%. The BOE is stuck between stubborn inflation and a weakening housing market. And on Friday, Canada's GDP is forecast to grow 0.2% month over month. A weak print could push the Bank of Canada toward rate cuts. Here's the question for tomorrow. If the Fed comes out more hawkish than expected, what does that do to rate cut odds, the 2-year yield, and the dollar? We'll tackle that in tomorrow's edition. That's all for today. Thanks for listening.